Ignition sequence start.
The reason I'm prepared for this position is because I've been preparing for this all my life.
As far as James, he's our guy.
We still got James Harden. Our goal is still to win a championship.
T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal.
Being in a win now situation, that's great. I'm a win now coach.
6, 5, 4, 3, 2.
Christian Wood's Rockets debut, 27 points, 10 rebounds, 2 assists, 1 steal, 1 block, 10 of 18 shooting. This man is the absolute truth. What is up and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every single day. As always, I'm your host, Jackson Gatlin, native Houstonian and the founder slash managing editor of ClutchCityControlRoom.com, your home for all things Houston hoops. You can follow me on Twitter at JT Gatlin, the show, of course, at Locked On Rockets, as well as the blog at Clutch City CR. And of course, look, you know we had to get him on before the season started. Joining us today is good friend of the podcast, host of the Noble and Roosh show on BallIsLife.com, and contributor for ClutchCityControlRoom.com, Roosh Williams. What's up, my guy?
Bang, 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 man. How you living? What's good?
I'm living pretty good right now because I am on cloud nine after the Rockets' final preseason game. They beat the Spurs 128-106, but let's be real, the game was over by the end of the third quarter, and Christian Wood put on an absolute masterclass of a first performance. It was, look, I know it's a preseason game, but it was reminiscent of James Harden's first performance as a Houston Rocket. I'm going to go that far. That's how good this guy was rolling out in Rockets red for the first time. You know, he was versatile offensively. It looked a little shaky between him and Harden, that two-man game at first, like first few possessions. They were trying to run the pick and roll. Things looked a little clunky. Gee, I wonder why. Maybe if a certain somebody showed up to training camp on time, it would have looked a little bit better right away. But this was his first preseason game, his only preseason game, sitting out with that sore left shoulder for the first three. And again, 27 points, 10 boards, 2 assists, 10 of 18, 2 of 6 from behind the arc. You couldn't have asked for a better first performance from Christian Wood. I mean, he's everything that you would want in a five next to James Harden.
Yeah, I mean, that was incredible. I don't know if I would go so far as to compare it to Harden's first two games as a Rocket, but look, I'm really excited for Christian Wood. You obviously, like, you know, he wanted to show out tonight and he did it, right? Like, how often does that happen? It's not guaranteed. He was able to do it. Him and Harden looked like they had been playing together for a while, but look, that's what happens when you have an elite MVP caliber wing like James Harden, and then you have a guy that can actually fit with him, right? Especially in a play as bread and butter and, you know, fundamental to basketball as the pick and roll. So, look, it looks like Houston got a huge pickup. It looks like there is a new dimension to their offense and their defense and their rebounding issue. Not necessarily that, you know, Christian Wood solves all things rebounding, because I think the Rockets still got out-rebounded, or I think they only out-rebounded the Spurs by one today. But he solves a lot of issues. He shores up a lot of holes, and it's just nice to see him come as advertised, possibly even better. So I'm really excited for Christian Wood.
Look, we've got a lot to talk about. We've got four preseason games worth of content that we can sift through to talk about with Roosh right now. And we will talk about as well the reports that were surfacing just before this preseason game from Adrian Wojnarowski and Shams Charania surrounding the rumors about James Harden and potentially going to the Philadelphia 76ers. There was the news that dropped that Ben Simmons was indeed on the table in certain James Harden packages. And then there was the news that the rebuttal from Shams via Daryl Morey saying specifically, we are not trading Ben Simmons. We view him as a huge part of our future. And first things first is, if Daryl Morey says that you're not getting traded, you should probably start packing your bags, right? I mean, that's exactly what happened with Chris Paul last offseason before the Russell Westbrook trade happened. And you know, maybe different situations, sure, but we'll get into that a little bit later, probably in segment three, because we want to focus on this preseason game as well as some of the other ones, some of what we've seen so far. You know, obviously Christian Wood is by and large the big story, the most exciting thing. But Roosh, one guy who, and look, this is a guy that you've had a love-hate relationship with for a while, and myself and many others included, maybe more so hate than love, but Eric Gordon has actually looked pretty good through preseason. I'm surprised, especially in this game. He was essentially playing the backup point guard role, and he had five dimes in this game and looked pretty good. Only had one turnover.
Yeah, I mean, he still looked awkward at times. He's not a natural point guard, and it's really obvious. But games like tonight are encouraging that, yo, he could actually take that role over. I mean, if we look at his stat line, I think he had what? He was 9 of 14, 4 of 9 from 3, 23 points, 5 dimes. And let's see, turnovers, only one turnover. So, I mean, if he could give us that or even some of that, that's already better than whatever he was last season, in my opinion. And that's a huge development. I still need to see more from him in that regard. But it's encouraging, you know. And I think you see when you get Christian Wood playing the way he was playing, when you get Eric Gordon playing the way he's playing, I think you see the Rockets can blow the hell out of a team like San Antonio, while Harden has like a more reduced stat line, right? 20 points, 9 dimes, 7 boards on 8 of 14 shooting. And he missed 3 free throws. He was 3 of 6 from 3. So that's the level you want to get to, right? You want to get to the level where you're the type of team that can thump another team and you don't need James Harden to drop 30 in order to do it. So if you get performances like that out of Eric Gordon and Christian Wood, it unlocks it. And I think the credit goes to Steven Silas, because we saw how Mike D'Antoni used Eric Gordon. And I think that is a stark contrast to how we're seeing Steven Silas use Eric Gordon. He's creating, he's giving, I mean, credit to Steven Silas again, because I am scared to give Eric Gordon the rock to create, but it looks like it's producing results. And the movement that you see within his offense is allowing Eric Gordon to do that. So good signs all around.
You know, and we're going to, I think the biggest thing too is Eric's not being tasked with being like a traditional floor general point guard. He's not out there having to, you know, run, you know, exclusively pick and roll until his hands are bloody or anything like that. You know, it's Silas's offense, as you kind of pointed out, that is putting him in the position to succeed. There's a lot of passing, cutting, repositioning, dribble handoff, where there's motion and movement happening that isn't necessarily being facilitated by one guy dominating the basketball.
In other words, it's not ISO ball. There's more to it. It's not just, hey, here's the rock. I don't know, score. You know, like, there's more to it. It's complex. You see guys running motions, running actions, and you see lanes opening up. Like, Eric Gordon has some of the cleanest lanes to the rim that I've seen him have in a few years. And that's why he's not turning the ball over, right? Because his handle's not that good, but there's space for him to operate. I think he started the game driving to his left and he finished and scored. I don't think I've seen him do that as a Rocket under D'Antoni. So,
yeah. I mean, you know? and you've got plays like the like where Harden drove in, kicked the ball out to Christian Wood, who then pump faked the three early on and then was able to drive it in and pass it back out to Harden, who repositioned in the corner for a wide open catch and shoot three. It was just nothing but the bottom of the bucket. It was beautiful. And being able to facilitate things like that, where, again, Harden doesn't have to be the guy to drop in 30 points just for them to have a chance to win. Now, is Gordon going to put up 20 every night? Is C. Wood going to be the truth every night and have 27? No, but the Rockets have a versatile cast where, really, on any given night, it's worth pointing out, John Wall and Boogie Cousins did not play this game because they were resting. And on any given night, you could have Wall step up, Cousins step up, Gordon step up, Christian Wood step up. You've got the other guys that are coming off the bench that can get hot. Ben McLemore can step up. Obviously, Gerald Green is a microwave. He can heat up real quick off the bench. And so you've got all these tools, all these weapons around James Harden where, on any given night, one of them gets hot, one or two of them gets hot, and you're going to run away with the game super easy, not to mention the fact that James is still going to be able to put out those 30-point, 40-point nights because he's James freaking Harden. Now, we're going to keep talking about this game. We're going to talk about some of the other role players from this game, some of the other standouts, and we'll get there in just one moment after a quick message from our friends over at Built Go. Whether it's a mental or physical wall, break through it with Built Go every single day. Look, Built Go is the best workout gel on the market. It's basically like 5-hour energy, but without that same like crashing feeling that you just get at, you know, a few hours later. Plus, it's natural, so it's way better for your body. Think of it like drinking a Monster, but with just a third of the caffeine and way better results. You know, they come in these little 1.5-ounce packages. You can toss it in your briefcase, take it to work with you, throw it in your gym bag, or just keep it in your pocket throughout the day. Get that little burst of energy when you need it. They've got three delicious flavors for the chocolate lovers out there. They've got chocolate mint, chocolate coconut. I'm really partial to their third flavor, peanut butter honey. Just can't go wrong with it. I'm a sucker for anything peanut butter and honey put together. I'm all over it. And you can check it out. Just go to builtgo.com and use promo code LOCKED and you'll get 20% off your very next order. So again, that's promo code LOCKED for 20% off at builtgo.com. Let's go. And continuing on here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Be sure you're not going to want to miss out on our shows next week. The Sunday night show that we're putting out for Monday morning, we're going to have Josh Lloyd of Locked On Fantasy Basketball on. He's going to give us a crash course in fantasy basketball. We're going to have Ali Khambijani on for the next show, and then we're going to have Ben DuBose on heading into the season opener. So three stacked shows, great guests all in a row next week. But right now, we're chatting with our guy, Roosh Williams. Roosh, you know, it's such a breath of fresh air watching an offense, watching a system that can generate quality looks for the role players in the system rather than just relying on the gravity of James Harden, isn't it?
It really is. And, you know, it's kind of funny because over the Mike D'Antoni years in Houston, everyone kind of dismiss the production, James Harden's MVP production. A lot of the numbers, the offensive rating numbers, all that kind of stuff, they dismiss it by saying, you know, it's Mike D'Antoni's system that is inflating those numbers. But it's funny because if you really watch the Rockets, especially over the last 2 years specifically, there isn't much of a system. I mean, there are some plays that they run. They have some staples that they do. It's an NBA offense, right? They're not just out there like playing pickup. But his system, quote unquote, was really just letting his best players, Russell Westbrook and James Harden, or Chris Paul and James Harden, just play their game in isolation. Play their game, get their points. If someone doubles, kick it out, get it moving until there's an open three. That was really it. But you're actually seeing a system. So far in the preseason, we're seeing a system that is generating open shots. Like if you run the action that is within the system, you are now open and there is a shot for you in rhythm, not just, hey, stand there. And if Harden kicks it to you, get ready. Right? So it's funny. It's ironic. And it will be painfully ironic if Harden does not stick around, you know,
to see the benefits of this system. Yeah. Speaking of Stephen Silas and his beautiful offensive philosophy and system, we've got a couple quotes now pouring out of the post-game presser from Silas talking about, he was just saying the team was really unselfish. Having simple, quick actions for guys to be able to get their drive and kick game going was a really big key. Silas also, you know, talking about Christian Wood, said he was great. It's funny because at halftime, when I had the team together, I asked him, C. Wood, when was the last time you played an NBA game? And C. Wood responded, I don't know, March. So, you know, C. Wood, you know, obviously not rusty at all. And then, you know, Silas going so far, and this highlights exactly what we've been talking about right now, going so far as to also say, you know, about their offense, that we're not going to be predictable. We're going to be more random as things progress. And that element of randomness, that optionality, the versatility, dynamic, whatever adjective you want to throw at it, it's such a welcome sight for Rockets fans who, again, we've drudged through 4 years of Mike D'Antoni, which, again, we're not going to discredit Mike D'Antoni. The dude is a future Hall of Fame basketball coach. And Rahat said it best when in our most recent podcast, saying, you know, that you and I are probably going to forget, Mike D'Antoni forgets more about basketball in a day than you and I will ever know. And, you know, D'Antoni is a basketball savant, genius, but maybe his system was a little dated. Maybe his ideology, his philosophy towards the game was a little bit dated. And now you're seeing Steven Silas, a young gun head coach with new ideas, new principles, new belief systems on how this should function. And you put him in a place with all of these tools, these versatile players, and it's still preseason. We take it with a grain of salt because, hey, it's not a real NBA game yet, but we're really close. Next Wednesday night, facing off at home against the Thunder, we're going to get to see this team fully healthy, all in action, all at the same time, because we didn't get John Wall. We didn't get Boogie Cousins. But I tell you what, Rouge, who else throughout just all four of these preseason games has stood out to you? If you want to take a moment to share some of your thoughts on Wall and Cousins, if you want to, or any of the other standouts that we've seen so far.
Yeah, real quick, I want to address, you used the word belief systems. And when it comes to Mike D'Antoni, I'm really critical of Mike D'Antoni on Twitter, as everyone or as anyone who follows me knows. But like
at
you said,
Rouge Williams on Twitter.
There you go. Like you said, he knows more. He forgets more basketball in a day than you or I will ever know. And that's true. But it comes down to belief systems, right? And his belief system was to stick to his guns. It's pretty conservative by definition because he's not willing to change it. And for lack of a better term, it's kind of stubborn, right? Not willing to play, not willing to trust guys deep in the bench, having short leashes for those guys when they do make a mistake, not changing anything up, just sticking to his guns. And, you know, that's it, right? That's all he's got.
Are we getting now, a Damari Carroll rant here soon?
I wasn't going to go there, but if you want to, we can.
Just now, shout out Damari Carroll. No.
now versus Steven Silas, right? Like, that's my first time hearing the quote that you just made saying we're not going to be predictable. And it's the opposite of Mike D'Antoni. Mike D'Antoni's offense was predictable. And look, I've talked to people, you know, players, reporters around the league, like when you talk to people that have been around LeBron James or played with LeBron James, they'll tell you he knows everything that's going on the court. He knows all the actions on the court. He's calling things out. So you have to think like things like that matter, right? Especially in a playoff game. I mean, the Rockets lost in the playoffs to LeBron James because of how predictable Houston was, and they were unable to beat it despite LA conceding that. So if you have an offense that is not predictable, now all of a sudden maybe a savant like LeBron James can't just predict everything you're doing and be ready for it. Like, it's that simple. It's the art of war. And I haven't read the book, so I'm just using that term lightly. But, you know, you have to have different
– this man, he tries to sound cultured. He's like, it's the art of war. I haven't read it, but
– Rouge, sun's out. No, but you have to have different weapons in your arsenal. And the Rockets, it was honestly impressive how – good they were over the last three, 4 years, well, over the last 3 years specifically, without being different. They just did the same thing over and over, you know? Like, D'Antoni never really took it to the next level. They just kind of plugged Westbrook in to try to make it work. But now you're seeing with Silas, like, what that can bring. But to highlight some other people, DeMarcus Cousins has been impressive. I think his stat line the other night was, like, 7 points, 11 boards, I think 4 steals and 2 dimes, something like that. If he can give me that, and he can give us more than that, but if he gives you that, or something close to that, I think people underestimate just how valuable that is to have that type of scoring or rebounding or playmaking or even defense. Like, he's moving really slow. He looks great, but he's moving slow. I don't know if that's because he's lost a step or because he's being cautious, but he's still making an impact on defense. Like, he still occupies space. He's got really good hands. Even when he just stands there and puts his hands up, like, that's better rim protection than the Rockets had all of last year. Post Capella, you know, so it makes a difference. John Wall, he plays with a purpose, right? Like Russ would make.
Oh, dude, that exasperated like sigh just spoke volumes right there.
I mean, look, Russ would act first and he would think later. He's an elite athlete, but he's going straight line, blowing by you, maybe like a Hezzy or something like that. John Wall has elite burst. Like, I love it when he does that move where he's slowly dribbling to the center of the court and he makes the defenders square up. And then as soon as they square up, boom, cross
change
back
of direction. Yep.
To the other side and he's gone. He drives with purpose. And his actions are with purpose. He does cross court skip passes to the corner. Like, Russ doesn't play like that. Russ will drive and kick, but John Wall is playing with the purpose. He's got, you know, a different, I don't want to call it IQ, but he's, you know, he's just sees the game differently, better vision. He really, really honestly is like a mix between Russ and CP3. It's kind of, again, ironic and painful in some ways, but great addition. So, like, you got to think Harden, Wood, Boogie, Wall, if Eric Gordon is going to have some kind of revamp and Steven Silas is pulling the right strings and pushing the right buttons and getting us the best of Eric Gordon, all of a sudden you got five really potent players. And then you got some good role players. Jayshon Tate, aside from tonight, Jayshon Tate has looked pretty good. I love his energy. I love his hustle. He's a guy that if some people are sitting out, like, yo, he's going to get some minutes. Or even if people aren't sitting out, he might get 10 to 15 minutes. And you use that energy for all it is. I'm really high on Sterling Brown. I want to see him get some more minutes. I think his athleticism is elite. I think defensively he's going to help a lot. And I really think that he has, like, especially getting out in transition, you know, he's just quick up and down the court. He brings intensity. David Nwaba, I need him to shoot a little bit better, but I love his energy and his athleticism.
Nwaba Dabadoo!
Okay. So they just have versatility, man, like all across the board. There's a bunch of new contributors. There's still some old faces. And it really just feels like a good mix. So
I'm thoroughly impressed with what we've seen from this team so far. You know, you hit a lot of the quick highlights on the role players that have really shown out. I do want to shout out Ben McLemore really quick too. He's been able to, again, in Silas's system, you know, a lot more dribble handoff, a lot more ball movement, repositioning, that kind of thing. He's been thriving, you know, and I think you were talking about this on Twitter the other day, how much more natural it is as a shooter to be able to catch the ball at the three-point line, pump fake the three, and step into a long two, as opposed to that awkward kind of sidestep, that side dribble to then pull up for a shot like that. And it's true. Like when you are playing the game of basketball, there's a reason that when you're like running the break and you're dribbling the ball down the court during a break and you pull up for a jumper, you've got that momentum and you're stepping into your shot. It's a lot easier to do that than it is to sidestep into a shot and get your shoulder square, get your body lined up, get your form right. And so Ben McLemore he's looked great. He's been hitting his mid-range shots after only hitting one and attempting one all of last season. You know, I just wanted to give him a quick shout out because, again, I think that he's going to be poised to have a really strong year under Steven Silas. And I do think that, you know, there's out there with Damari Carroll, I do think Ben McLemore was done a little dirty by Mike D'Antoni not really getting the minutes consistently last year when he showed and when the advanced numbers showed that some of the best like three-man lineups the Rockets had all included Ben McLemore, because again, you get a 40% three-point shooter out there, he's going to make good things happen for your team. And in the bubble specifically, pre-bubble, his defense was pretty suspect. In the bubble, it really felt like he stepped up defensively. And so far through four preseason games, also have seen that. Like, he's not a liability on defense. He's never going to be a defensive stopper. But, you know, he's buying into the system. They've got him in the right spots. They've taught him the right things. And you know, things are looking up for Ben McLemore. So we got to take one more break here. Final segment, we're going to talk Harden. We're going to talk the rumors going on and kind of how that may or may not play out. And honestly, why it shouldn't play out given what this team has shown through four preseason games. And we'll get there in just one moment. And final segment here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. Talking Rockets preseason, what we've seen, what we like. Maybe we should talk about a couple things that we don't like before we jump into the Harden drama. But one more thing that stands out is, you know, Roosh, now you've got a bunch of guys that are essentially, I don't want to call them like mini PJ Tuckers, but you've got extra like help on the wing as far as those really, you know, hustle driven, you know, effort, energy guys, good defenders in Nwaba, Brown, and Tate, which means you're probably going to be able to finally, you know, preserve PJ Tucker a little bit throughout the regular season, which is huge.
Yeah. I mean, this team has over relied on PJ Tucker, and PJ Tucker is great for what he is, but if you try to ask him for more than what he is, you know, there's a law of diminishing returns at some point with PJ Tucker, right? And in preseason, look, I know it's just a preseason game, but you saw the Rockets blowing out the Spurs, like the Rockets real rotation blowing out the Spurs real rotation, and PJ Tucker only had to play 25 minutes. So if you really have a team that can play PJ Tucker 25 to 30 minutes, maybe less than that some nights, because they're able to replace him with Jayshon Tate or David Nwaba, you know, then all of a sudden, like, that's the type of team that can contend for Houston, right? You see PJ's three-point attempts are, I think he was 2 of 2 tonight, right? Like, you might, if Houston can get 25 to 30 minutes out of PJ, maybe 3 or 4 three-point attempts a game, like, that's really all they need, right? Overextending him for 35, minutes a game. I don't know how many attempts he had. I think he was close to five, maybe. I'm just guessing, but that's what I would guess, is close to five. Like, that's at, or maybe even six. That's asking for too much from PJ Tucker. So now they have the depth to do that. Hopefully it translates to the season, but from what we've seen in the preseason, it should. And they have size, so they still don't give up any of their size. If anyone's listening to this and has Photoshop skills, Jackson, I know you do, make a Photoshop of, like, there's got to be a joke to thread somewhere with PJ Tucker, the Ninja Turtles, and Jayshon Tate and David Nwaba, and maybe somebody else being like in
Sterling
his
Brown, man, Sterling Brown.
Sterling Brown.
He's in there too. You know what? That's exactly what I'm going to put that at the top of my to-do list. We've got another quote coming out of Rockets post-game presser. Eric Gordon talking about the Rockets ball movement. And Eric says, if we ever want to be a major force in this league, we have to move the ball. It's contagious. The ball gives you energy and makes you even more motivated to score. Now, I'm just going to go out on a limb here and say that this is Eric Gordon subtweeting the hell out of James Harden. And Eric has not been shy about some of his quotes so far this training camp, this preseason. And, you know, good for him, honestly, because it, you know, we've discussed at length how difficult at times, or I apologize, maybe we haven't discussed it specifically, but just in general, it's a topic of conversation with regards to being a player that plays alongside James Harden. That's a tough gig, man. You know, you're expected to bust your ass defensively on a nightly basis, and offensively, you have to stand there, be cold the entire time on offense, and just be expected to catch and shoot and be in rhythm and do that at a reliable clip. And that's not traditional basketball. It's not. Basketball is a team sport, and, you know, this cold and calculating way that the Rockets have played the game throughout the last 4 years, because of the way that Daryl Morey believed the game should be played, focusing, you know, the hyper-analytical style, all of that, it takes some of the beauty out of the game of basketball. It really does. You know, I can sympathize a little bit with some fans who are like, I don't like the way Houston plays. Now, they blow it out of proportion. They say, oh, Harden's terrible and watching him. No, that's just flat BS. Harden is beautiful to watch. But it is a lot of the same thing over and over and over. Now, just because it works, you know, that's great, but it's not necessarily as beautiful to watch as, say, you know, the Tim Duncan Spurs, or I hate saying it, but the Golden State Warriors, you know, with KD and whatnot. They played some really beautiful basketball, some, you know, beautiful passing, lots of motion, all of that. Now, I don't want to say that everything is perfect. It's all sunshine and daisies. There were some things that I noticed that they probably need to improve upon. Christian Wood did take a few long twos that he has no business taking. Needs to focus on hitting threes and you know, operating inside the paint, basically. I'm okay if he takes a few long twos, kind of in rhythm, but he took some weird ones where he, like, stepped inside the three-point line and it wasn't even in rhythm, just kind of strange. As far as what else we've seen, the shooting for Jayshon Tate, Sterling Brown, and David Nwaba, those guys got to get that figured out. They got to get locked into a gym for like 1,000 hours with Jeff Hornacek, and he just needs to help them with their shooting form. I don't know if you've noticed anything that kind of stood out to you as far as things that they do need to work on with this group of guys.
Yeah, I agree with your points. Jayshon Tate's shooting, Sterling Brown, David Nwaba. David Nwaba has a real chance to make a big impact on this team, especially if everyone stays healthy. David Nwaba could be a real X factor, kind of like Luke Mba Amute was a few years ago. I think another thing that they're really going to need to see is Bruno an NBA player? Like, sometimes he looks like one, sometimes he doesn't.
Yeah.
Sometimes the potential is reached. And if they're really going to be relying on him, like if they're load managing DeMarcus Cousins, Bruno is going to be your backup five. So he's going to be playing. And I think that Silas, at this moment, I think it is Silas's intention to play Bruno some rotation minutes. So, you know, the development of Bruno is really important. Daniel House hasn't really had a great preseason. He missed, like, I think two reverse layups today. His shooting has been bad. I think he was 3 of 9 tonight. I think he was 3 of 9 the other night or one of these other nights. Like, he just hasn't really been there. He's looked kind of out of whack, has looked indecisive, kind of not sure of where he fits. Almost like he's trying to shake like the D'Antoni cobwebs and embrace like the new offense, but doesn't really know how to do it quite yet. But I want to say that's extremely interesting that Eric Gordon said that. That was my first time hearing that quote. Good for him. I mean, what that sounds like to me is that some people are finally not afraid to hold Harden accountable. And I think that as Rockets fans, we've known that this team will be at its best if Harden can be held accountable. So we'll see if he buys into that. But again, Harden 20, 9 and 7, 14 shot attempts. Like, if the Rockets, I don't remember off the top of my head, I'm just going off memory, but I feel like in the 17 to 18 season, there were a lot of nights where the Rockets would thump somebody and Harden had a stat line kind of like that, right? Like,
absolutely, yeah. He didn't have to go monster mode for them to have a chance to win. Because that lineup, that team had a lot more pieces where on any given night, a few different guys could step up. You had Chris Paul, who was pretty consistent that year with his stat line. And then you had a nice mesh of all the 3-and-D guys who, you know, it was a much more collaborative effort that year as opposed to it just being Harden balling out every single night for you to have a chance to win. And that's what this team feels like it can be, is a more collaborative team effort where you have a really balanced scoring approach between a bunch of different guys who, like I said earlier, on any given night, one of those guys can step up and be the guy for the team. It doesn't always have to be James Harden. It's not just James Harden or bust. And because of the system, it's just plug and play. It doesn't all revolve. It's not James Harden is the sun and everything revolves around him. You can plug and play with whoever, and there's not a distinct drop off. Like when Harden hits the bench and you're just like, oh, I hope we survive these minutes.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I mean, you saw that, like the bench unit, I think at one point Eric Gordon was a plus 25 and Daniel House was a plus 27 tonight. And you saw with Harden and Christian Wood on the bench, they increased the lead. Like Harden came in and they immediately lost the lead. It like shrunk to 7 for a minute in the second quarter. But you saw when Harden is off the floor, like, hey, the team's increasing the lead. We didn't really see that under D'Antoni, because when you have one way of playing that is exclusively reliant on your stars, like, you can't afford for them to not be on the court, because then everyone else doesn't know what they're doing. And it's basketball. So it's hard to run one super polarized system and then all of a sudden switch that based on who is and is not on the court. So, and in addition to all that, it's important to remember that not only did they rely on Harden, but the plan was, it was basically plan A, plan B. There really was not a plan C, right? It was Harden's going to be hot, Westbrook's going to be hot, or I guess we lose the game, right? And so now it's
plan A, option one, plan A, option two, plan A, option three, plan B, option one, plan B, option two, plan B, option three. There's layers to the offense now. There's layers to the game plan, and you got to give credit where credit's due. Steve and Silas has, you know, again, in just 4 short games, you can see the differences playing out in real time in front of you, the little wrinkles in the offense, the little things that, you know, the plays that he's calling over on the sideline. He's actually engaged in what's going on the court. He's not just letting Harden dictate the entire offense. Now, we've got a few minutes left here, and we do need to talk about the reports that came out right before this game. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to give you my hypothesis on what this was, Roosh, and you tell me if you buy it or if you're selling it. So we had the Harden hit piece come out from Tim McMahon, where it basically, you know, highlighted all the dysfunction from the previous years, from the Harden regime, you know, how things have played out over the last few years, the trade demand, either, you know, trade me, get me Russ, or trade me from last summer, and, you know, brought all that to light. So we had that come out, and then we had Adrian Wojnarowski report that Ben Simmons was being offered in certain trade packages for James Harden. And then immediately after that, not long after that, we had Shams turn around and say from the mouth of Daryl Morey himself that Daryl is saying that Ben Simmons is not being traded, that he values him as an important part of their future. So the way that I'm reading this and the way that I think it's kind of playing out is, we all know how, you know, basketball politics works, is these reporters are given insider privileges based on their relationships with certain front offices. They trade favors occasionally to drop news, you know, to try and muddy the waters as far as what's going on in the landscape. And so I think that the Harden hit piece was a lot of leaks by Daryl Morey and ex-Rocket staffers to kind of try to drop Harden's trade value. Then you have Rafael Stone, who leaks to Adrian Wojnarowski that Ben Simmons is on the table, and then Morey has to turn around and go to Shams and say, no, 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 he's not on the table, which puts Daryl Morey in a really tough spot, because now, what are you going to do? You know, you can't say that you're not going to trade one of your young cornerstone players and then turn around and trade him. That's an even worse scenario than what happened last summer with Chris Paul. Am I off base? Do you believe that? Where's your head at?
That could definitely be true. I see no reason that that, you know, is not plausible, you know? I mean, I wonder if they are kind of getting to those tactics. And by the way, I've heard Bullard on air call him Rafael, but his name is spelled Raphael. So we need to get some clarity
on that. It's definitely Rafael because they called him, they said Rafael repeatedly during his introductory press conference. So it is Rafael. But he also calls him Caboclo. So, I mean, like, there's, I don't know. You know what? I'll talk to Bull next time I have him on and I'll be like, hey, what's up with this man?
But yeah, I mean, look, I don't know, man. When it comes to rumors, just buckle up. They're going to be dropping every day. I'm at the point where I'm numb to it. Like when the Woj bomb drops and Harden's traded, you know, I will sulk and I will be sad and it's going to hit me. But until then, I'm not going to spend my days scrolling because like there's going to be X, Y, Z is going to come out, you know, and it's just going to be pain. We're going to hear about different packages. At the end of the day, what I really hope is that they get the right return. I mean, honestly, I really hope we have some Cinderella story. We kick ass and James Harden says, maybe it ain't so bad. But
I think, and here's where I'm at, and this is where we'll leave everybody off, is the way things look right now. Again, Rafael Stone is under no pressure to trade James Harden unless he's presented an offer that he just simply cannot refuse. A grandfather offer. Freudian slip. You know what? We're going to go with it. Screw it. A grandfather offer. It's supposed to be a godfather offer, but a grandfather offer that is absolutely incredible. Go. What's up?
If they get the grandfather offer, just for clarity, would be the Brooklyn Nets poo-poo platter, but continue.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's what we're going to exclusively refer to as the Brooklyn Nets poo-poo platter. That's the grandfather offer with dementia and, you know, it's just not great. So the godfather offer, right? If something like that presents itself to Stone, he should absolutely take the offer because Harden clearly doesn't want to be in Houston anymore, but he doesn't have to. And if Harden's out there producing and he's not, you know, a negative to the team, he's not causing chemistry issues, if he's out there being James Harden more or less, it doesn't matter why he's doing it. It doesn't matter if he's trying to put on a good performance for his future team. If he's out there and he's helping the team win games, then you're right. Maybe they do get that Cinderella story. Maybe they make it past the trade deadline and things look really good. And Harden's like, you know what? We have a shot here. Like, you know, they're cruising top four seed in the West. And then suddenly he's looking around and he's like, we've got a squad. Like, we can do this because it's James freaking Harden. He's capable of being the best player on a championship team. And finally, it feels like he's got the right core of guys around him to make it happen.
I mean, look, what he gave you tonight is better than no Harden, you know? 27 minutes, 8 of 14, 20 points, nine assists, 7 boards. Like, that's not the Harden that we've gotten used to, right? 35 points a game, 7 or 8 assists, like whatever. That's 20 points a game, 9 dimes, 7 boards. But that Harden is good enough to make this a championship team. So even if you get that Harden, still have a very, very high ceiling.
I you know what? And hey, I would roll the dice on it. I really would. And that's what I think they're wanting to do. Again, unless they get an amazing trade offer at some point, I think that's what they're looking to do. I don't think we're going to see him dealt before the season. I don't think we're going to see him dealt even at the trade deadline. I think they're going to hold off, give this team one more year. Again, one more chance, one more ride, you know, riding off into the sunset with James Harden one last time, and they'll revisit this whole situation next summer. That's what I think is going to happen. And, you know, I don't think I'm going to be wrong, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Rockets want nothing more than for some of this to die down and for the season to start so they can get to hooping and hope that it plays out the way we're talking. They win some games, things cool down a little bit, and they can maybe ride the year out and then reevaluate at that point. I mean, some of the packages offered would be great for a rebuild, but, man, you don't get a James Harden, you know? In the words of is it Coach Yost or Denzel in Remember the Titans? There's only one Gary Battier, you know, there's not another James Harden, you know? So, I mean, you got to enjoy that for as long as you can, assuming he's engaged on the court. And I like the team. It's just a matter of, can they stay healthy and can they connect some dots in terms of chemistry on the fly? They have a tough first, I think, 10 games, but most of the 37 is not that bad. If they play the way they've been playing recently and they play tonight, they can win a lot of those games. So we'll see.
All right, Roosh, always appreciate you stopping by, my guy. Go ahead and plug your stuff before we get you out of here.
Yeah, man, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram. I posted a little bit on Instagram lately, but I'm not interesting on Instagram.
Oh, look at you, Instagram model.
I'm not interesting on Instagram. I don't really do much on it. But Twitter, Roosh Williams, R-O-O-S-H Williams. And if you like podcasts, man, I do a basketball podcast, NBA, The Noble and Roosh Show. Type in "and" with the ampersand. We're on, you know, all the places you get your podcasts at. We interview NBA players. We interview media, different people. So check that out. And thank you, sir, Jackson. Always a pleasure.
Absolutely. Always fun having Roosh stopping by. So for today's episode, that's going to be it. As always, thank you all so much for listening. We look forward to having you back right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.